Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
And I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are in the last week of June, one of these months that has 30 days. Wrapping it up.
Only 29 days for the markets, though. Well, the 29th, the end of the month, end of the quarter.
Yeah.
So kind of a few less days for people to get all kind of crazy.
Yeah, it's like a February.
Yeah. It's like a February. It's like an elongated, it's like a leap year, but just a few months later. And we, of course, you didn't even mention we are just a couple days past the summer solstice.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Oh, yeah. June 21st is the longest day of the year.
Oh, it is?
Haven't you felt
or
like...
It was.
Haven't you felt like the days are dragging on?
It was just the way it should be. It should be like this all the time.
Yeah, nice and bright in the evening. What time does it get dark by you?
8-ish, 8:15, something like that.
Yeah, I've seen it. Yeah, 8:30, 8:45. And when you're on maybe the water, it's even later because you just get the full sun, you know, the full effect.
Well, up north, it goes to 10:30.
Wow. Is that because they're closer to the timeline?
No, it's just because it's up in the north. In the summertime, the northern areas, if you're in Iceland, it's 24 hours of sun.
Have you ever been somewhere that's like 24 hours of sunlight?
Yeah, Iceland.
Oh, okay. How's that like? What's that like?
Well, it's interesting because you don't really get a clue. You go out to do something, especially on a Friday night or something like that, and you never really have a sense of what time it is. And you look at it and you finally check a clock, it's 4 in the morning and it's bright out. It never gets dark.
Right. It's like you're in a casino.
No, it's weirder than that because you're outside.
Ah.
Casinos always, you can tell by the, you know, there's different ways of telling you how late it's getting, but you know, it's weird. Hmm. Weird.
How is Iceland? Nice?
Pretty? Yeah, I liked it. I think Iceland's fun. It's good for a couple of days. I wouldn't spend a lot of time there.
Yeah. Well, let me give you an update of what's happening with the markets. Last week, we had a down week with the S&P down about almost 1% for the week. The tech-heavy NASDAQ lost about 0.7%. However, it did notch an all-time high middle of the week last week. Dow Jones Industrial Average tumbled 2% for the week. And this is all in the heels again of this confusion and what's happening with the threats of tariffs and reciprocal tariffs. And we wrote a whole piece today for our quarterly newsletter here on this whole issue, a timeline of when the tariffs started, or at least the murmurs of potential tariffs and sanctions all the way through, you know, what happened, and kind of then charted some key stocks that were affected by the tariffs. Pretty interesting stuff. Like, for example, you know, they put the steel and aluminum tariffs on pretty much. Well, actually, they put those tariffs on washing machines first. Remember that? Back in January, I guess it was?
Yeah.
And Whirlpool is down, I think, 17% since, which is obviously a key company
for
washers and dryers. And they put tariffs on aluminum and steel. U.S. steel is down 20-something percent since the tariffs are put on.
Hmm.
So something's not working out quite as well.
It hasn't settled in yet.
Oh, yeah. Maybe that needs a little bit of time to adjust.
That's my guess.
Uh-huh. And you think these stocks are going to rally? The ones that are directly aligned with the tariffs, they're going to do just really well.
I think that there may be long-term buying opportunities here.
Well, that could be, but it seems a little bit odd that with the idea that we put these tariffs on, that these stocks have got hammered so severely.
Well, they did.
So now in response to the tariffs, we know that, of course, Europe is imposing tariffs on a variety of things. And China is reciprocating. And China is not only doing that, but I've also noticed something else. Since the beginning, I would say the beginning of April or so, May. Let me just look at my chart here. Yeah, I'll say April. Since the beginning of April, they started to slowly adjust their currency, the reference rate for the yuan. And they're adjusting it lower, weakening their currency. So now, since April, since this whole thing started rolling out with the tariffs and reciprocal tariffs, they have gone on and reduced their currency by about 5%.
Sounds about right. Sounds like something they'd do.
Of course. Why not?
Amazing how they can do it, get away with anything, but they do it.
Well, I mean, our currency was dropping for some time, and then they started talking, you know, Mnuchin and the gang over there was starting talking it up a little bit, and it started to pull the dollar up, and the thought that, wow, the economy is doing better, rates are going to be rising, and we're going to see, you know, a better GDP, and we're going to be looking at all the tariff. That should actually help the dollar, and that kind of moved up, but then it started to slide again. And I have a chart here of the China currency.
Yeah, it's interesting.
But one of the things that we did notice was that for a long time, the U.S. dollar was coming down. For about 2 years almost, the U.S. dollar had come down. China was, you know, when they were being called, or at least never being called, but said to be a currency manipulator in the murmurs of the back end. And in the, remember, they were carrying around for a long time the letter in the coat pocket.
Yeah.
We have the currency manipulator. We're going to call them a currency manipulator. Like, that means anything, that they're going to be called that officially. But there is some ramifications from a variety of organizations around the world, like the WTO and possibly the World Bank and other, you know, UNICEF and who else, whatever it is going to possibly do something if they are actually labeled a currency manipulator. But they never got that far. It was always held in abeyance and as a threat. So now China's saying, well, you know what? Not only are we going to, you know, reciprocate and we're going to put these tariffs on you that you put on us, but we're also going to start messing with our currency just to really screw with you. So now we're about 5%. It's even higher now. Each day it's moving up a little bit more, but that's a pretty steep slope, and it's clearly indicative of something going on since April. So there you have it.
Yeah.
So this is the last week of the month, the last week of the quarter. And we have several different important economic reports slated for the week. So we have consumer confidence that came out today, a little bit light. So the Case-Shiller number come out today also, the 20-city Case-Shiller, which was up about 6.6% was the number. 6.8% was expected. But, you know, that's a month over month. That's a number that's looking at year over year in the same month. A 6.5, 6.6, 6.8, doesn't matter the number. That's a pretty healthy increase in housing values during that period of time, don't you think?
Outrageous.
Yeah. And that's been going on for some time now.
Yeah.
So there's pockets of areas that are obviously not doing as well. I finally sold my lake house, by the way.
Oh.
Yeah.
Is that the one that has the midges?
Yes. Had the midges. And I'm out of Midgeville. But lost my shirt on that thing, by the way.
Oh, did you now?
Oh.
Stay out of real estate. Florida real estate's risky.
Talk about the worst investment of my life.
Really?
The worst investment of my life.
Huh.
Bought it for $340, put $150 into it. Several years went on. I sold it for like $317.
Wow.
Yeah, that's...
That is bad.
That's a bad investment.
This was in Florida?
This is in Florida on a lake. Beautiful piece of property. Two lots. White sandy beach. Boat lifts. Boathouse. Dock. Deck outside. Jacuzzi.
It sounds like all the elements of a winner.
Yeah. But it was just in the wrong place, it seems. Yeah. A place that just never... Not only did it not come back to life, it withered away the town. You know what I mean? It just died. It's just a place that everywhere forgot.
You should have done some demographics research maybe before you went into that one.
I didn't want to go into it. My wife wanted to go into it. I'm like, no, I don't think we should do this. Well, I want a house on the lake. I said, we live in a beautiful home. Got a pool. We got lots of bedrooms. I need a house on the lake. Whatever.
You're just blaming your wife. Okay. Well, that works.
Yeah. I got to blame somebody. It can't be my fault, for goodness sakes.
No.
So we have consumer confidence came out. We have durable goods orders coming out tomorrow. That could be important because that's going to be really showcasing how the tariffs on larger durable goods, larger items in the marketplace are selling. So that's the place that you have the washers, the dryers, the refrigerators.
Which should be interesting with all the stuff going on. Yep.
We have pending home sales. We have the third revision of GDP coming out this week. Expectations are about 2.2%. So we're still not towards that 3% number that everybody's all excited about. And we have personal income, personal spending, and PCE prices. PCE prices are the inflation measure, the personal consumption expenditures and the pricing of those that the Fed really looks at very closely. So lots of good stuff this week. Very important.
Yeah, I'd say.
Especially during the summer. Now, we had some news today about crude oil. There's been a lot of things happening with oil for some time now. There's been the announcement last week that there's going to be additional production put into the marketplace, about 1 million barrels a day, because oil got to the price, I guess, that Saudi Arabia was kind of happy with. They figured, okay, you know what? Let's see what happens if we start talking up this whole idea that we're going to increase production, or at least reduce the cutbacks that they had put in place many months ago. So, of course, the whispers and the rumors in the marketplace were for some, like, you know, 1.8 million, maybe 1.5 million barrel increase. And they came out with 1.0 million barrel increase. Well, what did that do? Well, of course, the markets were taken as, you know what? They're still holding back. It's not as bad as we thought. So oil went up like 4% that day. Then we see news today that the U.S. is saying that the allies should restrict all buying, basically cancel out all buying of Iranian oil starting, I think, in November. So what did crude do? It went higher.
Yeah, well, that would be logical.
So once again, we are shooting ourselves in the foot.
Here it is. It's 70, 70, 79 last time I looked.
Yeah. What does that do? Well, that curtail, I don't care what anybody says, it curtails consumer expenditures. If you're going from having to pay $2 a gallon to $3 a gallon over a period of time, whether it's a year, whether it's a half year, whatever it is, and you know how fast the gas stations adjust their prices.
Oh, yeah, like the day before.
Yeah. You know, the old days, it took a few little time. You had to get a guy to get on the ladder.
Yeah, they had to run out of the gas and buy some new gas before they jacked up the price.
Well, they had to go and get the ladder. They had to get that pole.
Yeah, with that, a lot of work.
And stick it up there and open the thing up. Now they just push a button. It automatically adjusts on the screen. It's almost in real time. You know? So yeah, crude is now above 70.
Next development, you can count on it.
So I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of talk that, and a lot of research I've seen that talks about both sides of this equation, that on one hand, that the higher prices of oil does not affect the consumer spending and consumer habits.
It makes zero sense.
Zero sense, right?
So yeah, right. I mean, yeah. It affects my spending.
Of course.
You can drop $60 for a tank of gas. I mean, right. You go, wait a minute.
Yep. I paid $5.25 a gallon last week for the boat.
For what?
I needed gas when I was in the Bahamas.
Oh.
So we put it 50 gallons and cringed.
Well, that's about what it goes for here. Actually, right now it's about $4.25.
And that was the good gas. That was the Rec 90, the 90 octane with no ethanol.
Ah.
So, but I thought it was still expensive.
I've never been convinced that no ethanol is a good thing.
I've seen studies on the ethanol process on outboard engines. It is not pretty. I don't know if cars act differently.
There's, well, what's the problem with the ethanol and the outboard engines?
I think it's something to do with they aid in the corrosion process.
It depends on how much ethanol. It can't have been 5 to 10%.
I'm just telling you that it's a big no-no to put ethanol in the outboards.
Yeah, okay.
So now with all the backdrop of what we just talked about, doing things like restrictions on Iranian oil and prices going up, and tariffs, price going up, and stocks going down. Here's an interesting development that I think really quantifies and solidifies the whole ridiculousness of these tariffs. We had a big backfire today. Harley-Davidson announced today they're planning to shift some production of its, or actually maybe it was yesterday, plans to shift some production of its motorcycles out of the United States in response to the European Union tariffs. Because they're going to be tariffing or charging more on certain products. And those are, a lot of them are involved with motorcycles. In fact, each motorcycle with this new tariff is going to cost about $2,200 more after the European Union raised its levies on imported U.S. bikes to 31% from 6% on June 22nd. So now, a motorcycle that's built here in the United States by Harley-Davidson that is then shipped over to the European Union for sale is going to cost $2,200 more. And Harley-Davidson said they're not going to be increasing their prices. They're not going to pass it on to the consumer. So that's the first problem. The first problem is that Harley-Davidson, well, someone's going to take a hit. In this case, Harley-Davidson is going to take a hit of $2,200 per bike, right?
You know, it reminds, I don't know why they're doing, this is like, to me, as bad management practice. If the EU is dinging them for $2,200 more, I think it should be very clear on, it should be raised, the price should be raised by that amount to the customer, and it should be very clear where that's coming from. You know, up in Washington State, they have this very onerous liquor tax ever since they legalized the selling of liquor to stores. It used to only be government stores. It used to be one of those old states where you had to go to the government store to buy a bottle of Jack Daniels. Mm-hmm. And it was expensive then. But now they have it available at Costco. Costco is the one actually that kind of forced the legislature to change the law and sell their state-owned liquor stores. But they've added this ridiculous tax of like 20 or 30% on each 750 milliliters or something. It's very high. And so the prices on the, when they go to Costco, they have the price says price, and it has the regular price, and it says state liquor tax. And then in big bold letters, they have the amount that you're paying to the state. And then total. And that's what you do. That's how you do it. You make it clear that you're not, you know, the company's got no choice. They're not charging the
right, but the consumer, the tax. But the consumer, if they were to buy a bottle of Jameson whiskey, right? They're going to also pay the same amount of tax, correct?
Yeah.
So the consumer, the one choice, the only choice the consumer has at this point in the state of Washington is to go outside the state, buy it, and bring it back. In order to do an end run around the tax.
To avoid the tax, right. That happens.
Now, the difference, is that now Harley-Davidson, in this case, Harley-Davidsons are being singled out. And there's other bike companies that probably produce in America and ship them over. But they're being singled out. And any bike that's made inside of the EU for the people in the EU does not have this extra tax on it. So therefore, they're at a major disadvantage from a competitive standpoint.
No, I'm not arguing this. This is philosophical. I'm just saying that if you're going, that they shouldn't drop the price to make up for the tax that's being leaned against them, which is what you said they're doing.
Yeah, well, either way, they're going to take a hit. Either they're going to lose customers.
Well, they're going to take a hit one way or the other, but I would say if they're going to take a hit, at least they should make it very clear that it's not their fault.
Okay, I got you. But that what they decided to do is to eat the costs.
Yeah.
And
it's stupid.
The expectation is they're going to lose about $90 to $100 million annually.
They're absorbing it. Yep. How is this smart?
So what they did was the smart thing. They actually did the smart thing. They said, we are now going to shift some of our manufacturing and production to Europe. That solves that problem.
Until Trump found out.
Yeah, Trump was not happy. He said, so just to clarify what's happening here. So Harley-Davidson said, you know what? We're going to get dinged by this $90 to $100 million annually on this if we don't. And of course, if we do raise the price to keep it a revenue or an earnings neutral situation where they just raise the price of the bikes, they could possibly be at competitive disadvantage and then lose money anyway because now they're not selling their bikes. So what they said was, hey, you know what? Let's go over there and play the game. So now President Trump, and they'll be moving a lot of employees over there, so a lot of jobs will be lost here in the United States, et cetera. It's a total backfire. Now, President Trump, in a tweet storm session the last couple of days, one of the things he said was that Harley will pay taxes like never before if they move their facilities to Europe. So,
well, they can't do that. It's probably illegal.
I don't think you could single out a company.
No,
and try to raise their taxes.
It's unconstitutional.
Yeah. So to raise their taxes. Oh, we don't like what you're doing. We'll raise taxes.
You're just making a fuss.
Yeah, making a fuss. But what do you think? I mean, do you think this is so the impact of this is now starting to backfire on companies, and we're starting to see that companies are trying to get creative to avoid some of this onerous amount of retaliatory taxes that are hitting. I don't know if actually the administration thought there would be a trade war. I think they thought everybody was going to buckle under the pressure.
We don't know. It's still too early for, as far as I'm concerned, to tell. All I know is that Thomas Jefferson tried doing this when he was president.
How'd that go?
It created a short-term depression.
Aha. Taft-Hartley, remember those? Taft-Hartley? No. Smoot-Hawley. Smoot-Hawley tariffs? Why do they always have two names and everything, by the way?
It sounds better.
Is that what it is? It's more rhythmic?
It sounds like the more than one guy's behind it.
Ah. So we had the Smoot-Hawley taxes, and that was one of the contributors to the depressions in the 30s.
Yeah. We got plenty of evidence that this causes problems.
Yep. Just keeping on the theme of President Trump, because everybody else does it. They talk about President Trump in every other news item. He's now providing restaurant reviews. I'm not sure if you're aware of this. Did you know this? Did you see this?
Yeah, the red hand thing.
So Sarah Sanders was the White House press secretary, was in a restaurant, the Red Hen restaurant in Virginia, I believe, right?
Yes, in Lexington, Virginia. And it's believed, by the way, that who finked on her was – oh, no, I'm sorry. No, this is the other one. The thing at the Mexican restaurant.
Somebody was eating at a Mexican restaurant from his administration?
It was the head of the Homeland Security woman. She couldn't maintain Homeland Security, so they harassed her until she left. But it was protesters that were finked on her by Elizabeth Warren, sent the protesters over.
Why, was she eating at the same restaurant?
No, she just thought it was funny. Somebody called her and says, hey, this the girl from Homeland Security, I hate to use the word girl, but I did, is here eating. Oh, well, then they sent a bunch of protesters over to shout her down.
So am I not supposed to be eating Chinese food? Because that would pretty much ruin my life.
Why? What do you got to do with any of this?
I don't know. I'm an American. I should be protesting the Chinese food.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Well, only if it's being shipped over from China, I think. I have no idea. I'm not protesting anything.
No. Let them do that. Anyway, it seems that Sarah Sanders was in the Red Hen restaurant, and the proprietor of the restaurant did not want anyone that works with the Trump administration eating at that restaurant and shoot her out.
Yeah.
Donald Trump's tweet, which, by the way, we have this snapshot of the tweet on DH Unplugged on episode number 413. And he said, the Red Hen restaurant should focus more on cleaning its filthy canopies, doors, and windows. Badly needs a paint job, in parens. Rather than refusing to serve a fine person like Sarah Huckabee Sanders, I always had a rule. If a restaurant is dirty on the outside, it's dirty on the inside.
As a lot of people go, he's kind of a clean freak. You know, he's a germaphobe.
Yeah.
And he probably does think that. I think he's probably telling the truth that he thinks, you know, I know a lot. I feel kind of the same way. If I find a place that's like, there's a Chinese restaurant that's kind of a hole in the wall in Oakland called Shandong. And it's one of the best Chinese restaurants in the West Coast, but it's a little hole in the wall and it's all mirrors. The walls are all mirrors.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the giveaway. Those mirrors are spotless. Yeah. I have never seen a smudge on those mirrors.
But when it comes to Chinese food, I got to tell you something. The cleanliness of the restaurant sometimes has an inverse relationship to me to the quality of the food.
Yeah.
When it comes only to Chinese food. Anything else?
Not in the case of the West Coast places.
Oh. So there's been some other stories about the proprietors. There was some tweets going on that the proprietor of the Red Hen chased Sarah, you know, was harassing her and chasing her down the street. She went to another restaurant and I don't buy this. And told the other, don't let her eat here. There's some weird stories going around about this whole thing.
Yeah, that sounds like BS.
And then they were turning around saying, wait a minute. I thought there was some places that were okay to refuse service to certain ethnic groups and gays and lesbians. And there was a whole hoop to do about this. And the Republicans said it was okay. The Democrats said it wasn't. And isn't this the same thing? I have the choice.
You can't get a good meal anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the problem. On to more important news. This one is it just gets stranger by the day. John McAfee.
Yeah.
Now, back in the day when he was actually a respected technology dude.
Entrepreneur, yeah.
Did you know him? Did you meet him? Did you ever have any?
Oh, yeah, I had dinner with him.
You did? And what was that like?
He is a, well, this is a long time before he became kind of weird, but he was the guy who pretty much popularized the idea of computer viruses. He had a newsletter. He promoted the idea that they were all going to kill us all. And then, he had a solution to the problem that he kind of created. I thought he was a marketing genius. And then, of course, he sold out and made millions and millions. I don't know, $100, $200, $300 million in a sellout.
Well, I think it was Symantec bought it, right?
Yeah, Symantec bought him. And then he became a vagabond. He bought some place in the middle of the nowhere desert, somewhere in Colorado or something up in the mountains, and then kind of disappeared from the scene, turned up in Belize with some scheme down there. But he got strung out on a lot of substances.
Mm. Mm. Well, now he's been caught up in an alleged assassination attempt. He's claimed he's poisoned.
Yes, this is the latest. Somebody's trying to kill him now.
And by the way, supposedly he has survived several assassination attempts.
That's what he says, yeah.
I don't know why somebody wants to kill him, but he says that his enemies have spiked something and showed pictures of him wired up to everything at the Vidant Medical Center in North Carolina. I mean, he was this guy, he had a feeding tube down, he had IVs in, he looked like he was pretty much in the super ICU unit after a major, major catastrophe. He was unconscious for 2 days.
Yeah. Yeah, still manages to tweet.
And somehow, it's automated. It's automated. He probably has some kind of a Twitter attached to his brain automatically somehow. And he can you know, through some kind of telekinesis or something, type.
Well, yes, McAfee is a interesting guy. I think he still owes me a dinner.
And now I wouldn't go. Supposedly, he's looking to introduce a physical cryptocurrency. Let me just restate that.
Oh, yeah. He's gotten on the cryptocurrency bandwagon big time.
Right. But now listen to this. You have to listen closely. He's looking to introduce a physical cryptocurrency.
Which makes no sense. And last time anyone tried pulling some physical currency, you know, workaround was the Ron Paul coins. Remember those? Ron Paul, a series of coins, Ron Paul coins. It was supposed to be some sort of alternative money. And the feds just cracked down and busted them and threw half the guys in jail.
Yeah. Just to get back to the trade wars for a second here. I put this out of order. There was some weekend rhetoric from the White House, and Treasury Secretary Mnuchin got up and he said that trade restrictions are going to apply to all countries that try to steal our technology. That sunk markets yesterday. The market was down 350 points or so yesterday, the Dow Jones.
Yeah, because we want our technology stolen, I guess.
Well, no, because they talked about it was not only are we going to apply this to China, but we're applying this to all countries that steal our technology, which I can't disagree with that we don't want our technology stolen, of course. But two questions. First, why is the U.S. administration issuing blanket threats via social media? I mean, that's just insane. This whole social media thing.
Yeah, I think it's nuts. I agree.
It's just crazy. The second thing is, just after that, very well timed, 3:40 in the afternoon, Navarro comes out and says, no, we're not going to be doing anything like that. I don't know where you got that information from. Markets popped up 100 points right after that comment. So we got the White House saying something. We got Mnuchin saying something else. We got Navarro going back. And there's a difference between, at least I think there is, walking back something a little bit, right? You know, you say something, we didn't exactly mean all. We meant, you know, just those countries that, but, you know, we want, we soften it up. Rel softening. Because Navarro came out and said, you know, no, it's not happening. And the markets are overreacting. Like they were freaking out at the White House that the markets were going down. So they sent him out to do a news conference at 3:40. Again, very well timed in the afternoon. So it just seems like one hand's not talking to the other over there.
Probably not.
Yeah. Let's see here. Rumor swirling around that Kraft Foods is looking to make an offer for Campbell Soup. Could be a good marriage. Kraft Foods looks like it's there's complimentary.
Yeah, I guess.
When's the last time you had a Campbell Soup?
I think I had one of those experimental chunky soups that they had that was in a kind of a in a plastic container with it was. You ever seen some of these?
Yes.
Straight. I had one of those.
I haven't had Campbell's in a while, but it is one of those recession-resistant type of deals. You know, when recessions come, Campbell's...
Oh, yeah, Campbell's soup is a mainstay for a lot of cooks, a lot of home cooks that use the chicken mushroom or the mushroom soup as a base for all kinds of things, which I would never do because it just sounds like getting a new way of getting heartburn. But yeah.
And salt. I think a lot of salt intake there.
A lot of salt in all their soups, yeah.
You know, this is reminding me of something that I have to talk to you about. I must talk to you about something. It's not on the list of discussion today, but I think it's going to be a discussion that you're going to like. I bought myself a present.
Salt?
Sous vide.
My God.
Yes.
All right, when you get food poisoning from this monster, let me know.
Why am I going to get food poisoning? Why? Because it doesn't cook anything?
Well, it's cooking at the temperature that is borderline dangerous.
Well, let me tell you what I mean. I mean, two things. The first thing I meant, just for those of you who don't
know. How much did you pay for this device, and is it a professional model?
I don't know if it's professional. It's high-end, though. I will say it's the highest recommended that I've seen. I paid $159 for this. It's Wi-Fi and Bluetooth enabled.
Sounds low end, but go on.
I bought this and I bought a little bucket thing and I have a seal meal, so I use that sometimes. But I decided to cook a steak. So I bought some filet mignon. I bought New York strips also. I just did a simple dusting of olive oil, a sprig of rosemary, a little bit of salt and pepper.
Yeah.
And garlic cloves. Threw it in there for a good 2 hours at 130. Took it out. Put it in a cast iron skillet. Very hot, very finely oiled, olive oiled cast iron skillet for about a minute on each side. I must tell you, seriously, that was a ass-kickingly tender steak.
I would think so, yes.
And I thought the New York was better, only from a flavor aspect, but that's my taste all along. I like that. And it was still very tender. Then caught some fresh dolphin and put that in the sous vide. Put a little bit of I made a ginger soy marinade, put it in there, sealed them up, cooked it for, I don't know, 2 hours at 130. And then put it in the pan for a second with the little bit of the sauce and kind of thickened it up and put it out. It was delicious. Very tender, very juicy. I'm going to try to make a meatloaf.
I think a lot of parasitic worms that you can find in fish just love the temperature of 130.
You think they get active, more active, and they start really?
I don't know. Maybe they come. You'd see because they usually kind of work their way out.
But if you're supposed to have a steak at 130 anyway, 125 if it's rare, 135 is medium.
Yeah, I would. Well, what I would do if I was like wanted that kind of steak, which I do like, I agree, and I've had a lot of sous vide cooking in certain restaurants that I trust. And I would take the steak and cook it French style. I would do what you did at the end without the cooking in the middle.
So you mean like a black and blue?
Yeah, there you go. I never heard that term, but I know what you mean. Yeah, that'd be fine. Why would I waste 2 hours when I could just give the steak the once over with a super hot cast iron pan, bang, bang on both sides and sear around it too, just to make sure. Because the only real danger with a steak is E. coli.
It's definitely a little bit more work, although you let it sit. One of the things I do like about it, if you did have, let's say, a party or something like that, you don't have to worry. You just stick it in there and say, okay, I'm serving at 7, so I put it in at 5. And if it's a little bit later or whatever, it doesn't matter. It could sit in there for a while at that temperature. It doesn't get any further done.
Yes.
So, you know, that's
I believe that's true.
Yeah.
All right, well, have a ball.
Thank you very much. China has taken down or blocked HBO's website after John Oliver had a critical segment about President Xi.
Oh, HBO must be pleased as punch that that happened.
Yeah, he put a side by side of Xi and Winnie the Pooh.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. So we've been talking about this whole idea that the yield curve has been flattening, even though a lot of people over the last year or so have been talking about, oh, the yield curve is widening and it's really good for financials and you got to buy the financials and all that. I'm like, what are they talking about? Right? We've had this discussion. Yes. Meanwhile, financials finished at the low for the year today.
Yes, good.
Okay, Deutsche Bank is at the low since it came public.
What's it selling for? What's book?
Deutsche Bank is at, let's see here. Yeah, it's six something.
Sounds like a good bet.
Something's not right with the stock. Let's see. I'll click this up. It's really been, let's see, DB. Search, click. Deutsche Bank, it's $10.79. I thought it was $6 for some reason. I don't know where my head was at. $10.79. $10.80. How is it possibly still moving? I don't know. It's still trading? No, $10.80. After hours, $10.78. And I don't have a book value here. Let's see.
Oh, get the big Bloomberg terminal. It should tell you everything. It should tell you the guy's last name who just bought one share.
Okay, let's see here. Enterprise value is a negative $272 billion. Negative. Price to book is
Really? The negative, it's got a negative enterprise value?
Yep.
Doesn't that mean it has a lot of cash on hand or something?
That may mean there's a lot of debt on hand.
I thought debt added to the enterprise value.
No, it should take it down. It should take it down. I believe it should take it down. Let's see, total debt. $670 billion, and the value and the market cap of the company is $22 billion.
Okay, what is the book value?
Enterprise value is a book value. Book value is a big book. Price to book is 0.29.
Yes, doesn't help.
Well, it does.
It does if I want to. If I have a calculator,
it's 0.29. The book the price to book is 0.29. So that means that the price is if it's 1-to-1, it'd be the same. So the book value is a lot lower.
Yeah. So the book value is probably about $2.90. Uh-huh. That would be my guess.
Yeah.
So that's, wouldn't it be the other way? Wouldn't it be $29?
I don't know. I'm going to look in here. I'm looking. I don't know. I'm using a different thing, a different computer, so I don't have any of this stuff here. Financials. Maybe it's under there. Let's see. Total revenue. Book. Nope. I don't know. I don't have it, to be honest with you.
I'll go on Yahoo and get
That's where I'm on.
Well, Yahoo has it right there.
I'll go to the summary page here. Beta, PE, EPS, earnings, volume. I don't see it.
What's the symbol?
DB.
DB, as in decibel. They're making a lot of noise in the market.
Yeah. Statistics, right there. Statistics had all this other stuff. Beta, 50% share statistics, short interest, short float, dividends, total cash, total book value, 37.43.
Mm-hmm. It's $37 and it's selling for 10?
Yeah. Jeez. Has $965 billion of cash, $467 billion, and $670 billion of debt. So it's $300 billion net. Something's killing the enterprise value. It must be with the bank, it must be something else. Return on equity is negative. Return on assets is negative. Profit margin is negative. Short ratio is, 11 days to cover. 2 billion shares outstanding. 37% drop since last year.
Yep. I'm telling you, this is a stock to look at.
All right. Well, you got the opportunity coming up shortly.
Well, I don't know if they may have not hit bottom.
Well, you're the one that's
I'll tell you what, I'll put it on there. That way we have to watch it.
Yeah. Well, you had the short on that, don't you remember? 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I did. I did. It would have paid off big. Now I'm going to turn around right about now.
All right. Now, we talked about this whole yield curve issue and the banks and all this. And the fact that the banks were having trouble because the yield curve was tightening and flattening and all this. Well, on Thursday last week, the gap between the 2-year and the 10-year U.S. Treasury note was roughly 0.34 percentage points. And it was last at those levels in 2007. Now, what's interesting here is, and there's a chart that shows you this whole concept here that we put over on the site. And you can see that the yield, this is the spread.
Okay? Yeah, I'm looking.
And what this shows you is that, you know, over the last several years, the spread was pretty wide. And then starting in about 2014, the spread started to shrink.
Dropping. Yeah.
And now we're at 0.34, which is where it was back in about 2007. And the point here is that every recession over the past 60 years was this, I don't know, how many has there been? Maybe five? Something like that? Every 60 years would take us back to
every 20 years or something, like every 10 years or something. Yeah.
So maybe there's five or six of them, has been preceded by the inverted yield curve, according to research from the San Francisco Fed. Now, curve inversions have correctly signaled all nine of recessions since 1955. So it's
headed in the direction of cranking up another recession, or is it supposed to go down under the zero line and then come back up?
If it goes down below, it's inverted.
Yeah, so that means it's the time to get out.
Yeah, that would be a big issue. So it was only one time back in the 60s that an inversion was followed by an economic slowdown, not officially a recession. But it's a pretty good predictor. So the question is, if the Fed knows this, and the Fed basically has control over the yield curve to a degree, right? Because if they keep on hiking rates, it pushes the short end up, and therefore it could start to invert. That's how the inversion happens, right? They push it up too high. That's the whole point.
Well, it's headed that way.
Yeah, the whole point is if they push interest rates up too much, it screws up the economy. Just as if they reduce interest rates, it helps the economy.
So you think they're just going? You think they're pushing it down? Because this curve down is not. It looks artificial. I mean, it looks like somebody's pushing it down.
Well, that's the whole idea, that the economy is healing, yields are coming up, and they're expecting the Fed to start, you know, taking down.
Well, they have to. They have to lower.
But the point is, though, if this is well known, it's back to this whole issue.
Yeah, I agree. If this is well known, then what are they up to?
Yeah, then the Fed is not going to be doing something that's going to be causing a recession. They're going to back off a little bit.
But you'd think, unless they want to cause a recession.
Why would they want to do that?
They're maniacs. Maybe they have no idea.
Well, so we'll see what happens. But I thought it was a pretty interesting chart and the whole concept here. Big week in Saudi Arabia. Women can now legally drive cars.
Yeah, and there's already been two wrecks.
Really?
No. Oh. One hit a tree in the middle of the street.
Ah, I see.
I don't want to do any woman driver jokes.
Okay, good. That's probably a good idea. GE's in the news. Today they announced that they're planning to spin off their healthcare business and unload its ownership in oil services company Baker Hughes. So they're trying to shrink the company significantly. Now, full disclosure, I bought GE on Friday, last Friday.
Yeah.
Or maybe I bought it yesterday. Today's Tuesday? Could have been yesterday. The stock was
up. So you're putting it on the list too.
Yeah, I am. Stock was up about 8% on this news. The other thing that happened is that GE was kicked out of the Dow.
Yeah.
And there's been several studies that show
the stock automatically.
But what's interesting is that several studies have shown that after companies kicked out of the Dow, it often performed very well. Already the spread between the performance of GE and Walgreens, Boots Alliance, Walgreens, is about 9% since they were announced they're out in the favor of GE.
Yeah.
So there you have that. Let's see. I don't know if we're going to talk about this here. Cryptocurrencies smashed over the weekend. Well, I'm going to look at this here. Hold on. Let me get my handy dandy.
Well, it's not smashed as far as I'm concerned. Within the purview of this show, we've seen Bitcoin at $400.
Yeah, that's true. Right now, it's up a little bit. Bitcoin right now, maybe it's not. Let's see. Bitcoin. Bitcoin's at 6,085 right now. Litecoin's at 76. Ethereum's at 431.
Stay there as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, you tell them. Let's see here.
That's what I'm doing. I'm telling them.
Supreme Court ruled today in favor of President Donald Trump's September order to restrict travel from several majority Muslim countries to the United States. 5-4 opinion written by Chief Justice Roberts. has now reversed it and is going to allow the ban.
Yeah, well, it's within his authority. It's what they said, and that's what it, everybody else thought. It was just these activist judges that decided to
put a lot the of money on. Spent on the whole the trials and legal fees and what else?
Money wasted.
And who wins on this again? The lawyers.
Of course. They always win. That's their job.
Yep. If this is the time of the show where we plead, beg, and ask for your kind donations. And we do need those. By the way, it is episode number 413. So we have a shirt that is waiting for you with your name, with our signatures, ready to go. Just the cost of the show. So it's $413.
Anybody old hot rodder might want a 413 shirt.
That's right. I don't know what that means, but that's right. What does that mean?
There's some 413 engines.
Oh.
That were popular in the 60s and 70s.
The double barrel carburetor with fuel injection 413s.
Yeah. Well, usually you don't have a carburetor with fuel injection, but that's okay.
That's what made it so special. anyway, we do ask for you to please kindly donate. Last week, everybody was very kind, but we need a little bit more kindness. John was telling me that there's a lot of bills that are piling up on his desk that we're not paying, so we don't want to all of a sudden go off the air. That'd be terrible. That'd be awful. And so anyway, you can donate to the show. Go over to the homepage of DH Unplugged. Click on the donate button and have at it. We're not going to say much more about that, but you know what? If you just, you're going to feel bad if one day we're just gone. You just don't hear us anymore. It's all over, and it could have been your $50 that would have helped out. So any amount helps.
Yes, yeah, especially when the servers go down.
Yeah, you don't know when that could happen, and it would be directed just at you if you don't donate. All right, now we have federal limericks, and just as we talked about, this was a little special segment. Did we say we're ending this in June or July?
I don't know that we're ever ending it.
Oh. I thought we said something about June or July.
No, I don't remember this.
Well, anyway, I have written here July ends the special section of the show. So if you have a desire to get in your limerick, and by the way, when you send in a limerick, send in a donation at the same time. That goes hand in hand. We will read it on the air and we will grade it accordingly.
We've only got one and it's written by you.
Yeah, nothing this week because I don't think we pressed it. Last week we had so many also. Maybe people thought we had too many. So send in your limerick. We'll have it to the Fed Limerick section. Send in your donation. It'll go along with the limerick, and we'll be very happy, and you're going to be very pleased. So we have one Fed Limerick today written by myself. And here we go. They indicate that rates will rise. The economy is solid, they surmise. But if stocks go lower, they will surely go slower, keeping equity prices on their highs.
That's pretty well done. I like it. It's got a good rhythm to it. It's got a good structure. I'll give you an A.
I think it's my second or third one. I'm getting better.
You've been doing so many. You're about to bound to get good.
You're still not going to put one in, huh?
You would hate to blow this whole thing up by putting one of my great limericks in.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Maybe I will. Maybe I will. Maybe the next show.
Sir Limerick. We have a winner to announce for the Close to the Pin competition for American Tower, which John did not participate in. He was too busy to provide a guess. Actually, it's my fault. I only sent you two emails.
Yeah.
I could have sent you more. So, and hounded you. But
I didn't have a good feeling for this stuff one way or the other, even though it was my idea.
It was your idea. It was totally your idea.
It's the irony.
American Tower was... Was the name that we had in for the Close to the Pin competition. And the winner will receive an unsigned, but yet a beautiful collector's T-shirt as well as a lovely certificate. But the group as a total that participated, Bryce guessed at 140.35 on average. And the final stock price was $142.82. And the winner was Marcus G, coming in 7 cents away from the actual price.
Yeah, you really nailed it.
This is like the Price is Right. You should get like a $100 bonus or something.
Or something. Jim B came in second and he was only 12 cents away.
Yeah, pretty impressive. We have smart listeners. So
I want to see the guys. I like the guys who could win this game more than once.
We've had a couple. Now, by the way, all of these people that win are eligible to be in the end of the year Closest to the Pin Cup. And hopefully your fate will not be the same as the gent who won it last year, if you remember that.
What happened?
He died.
What?
Yeah. You don't remember
he died this? After winning from a heart attack?
All I know is I sent the information along. I sent his all of his prizes. I sent his trophy, the big trophy that we get. It's like a 2-foot trophy and a shirt and a few other things. And I get a call. It's like, I don't know if you know this. I don't remember his name. I'm sorry, but he passed away. I'm like, no, this is a joke. What are you talking about? Somebody called me out of the blue. No, really. We just got this shipment and we want to tell you, he loved your show and all that, but he passed away unexpectedly. I was like, what? Okay. I didn't ask for the trophy back. I didn't do anything like that. But
jeez.
So there you go.
Harsh.
Yep. All right. The Bay Area. You know anybody there?
I think so.
Yeah. The Bay Area. John C.
Unless you're talking about Tampa Bay, which is also called the Bay Area.
It is. But this is the Bay Area by you.
Yeah.
The Bay Area is so expensive.
Yeah. Pretty seems so.
Earning $117,400 a year qualifies you as low income in some counties. Every year, the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development releases income limits, the minimum income level required to qualify for some affordable housing programs. So to be considered low income in San Francisco, San Mateo, and Marin counties, a family of four must earn $117,400 a year, the maximum.
Yeah, sounds right.
Very low income is considered $73,300.
Yeah, which would be a pretty good middle income, high middle income in most parts of the country.
Why would anybody live there?
Well, they're calling that these numbers are referring to people who are just all of a sudden who just sit down in the Bay Area out of the blue. Most people that live here have been here long enough that they have picked up equity. They can refinance their houses and spend a lot of that money and keep upkeep and other things. And they don't have this issue. They can get by on a lot less money than that. You can get by in some parts of the Bay Area probably for $40,000 easy if you got in a long time ago.
Right. If you got in a long time ago. Right.
Yeah. Well, of course. That's why people live here, because they got in a long time ago. I mean, I've been property owner in this area since 1972.
Well, hopefully your house appreciated more than my lake house.
I'd say.
Yeah.
But so did the doghouse in the backyard, right. Apparently.
Yeah, everything did. Continuing on with all these problematic income issues and earnings and all that, the end is finally here for Toys R Us in the United States, closing down all of its stores. All of its stores will be closing on Friday.
You know, I went to the Toys R Us. Did I talk about this on the show?
No. Nope.
So I went to the Toys R Us up here to get some, pick up some baby toys. And I go in there because I remember the way Toys R Us was. And there's a lot of fun stuff in there you could find for kids. And so you go in there now, it's like walls and walls and aisles and aisles and aisles filled of Disney collectibles, action figures. It's like it's action figures. You turn around the corner, there's more action figures and stupid crap that goes along with the action figures. These aren't toys.
What are they?
How about something to play with? I looked for example, I specifically, since my son has a baby and his wife, I specifically looked for one of those plastic hammers that when you hit it, it makes a squeak sound.
Oh, the squeaky noises. Yeah, I would love those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, they didn't have it.
Nothing.
No, they didn't have that, but they had tons of stupid action toys. I'm thinking, no wonder these guys went out of business.
How about that lawnmower that would have a poppy thing on the top when you go?
Yeah, I didn't see that. Mm. The pop lawnmower. Yeah, exactly. Those things are great.
My kid loved that.
Yeah, they're great. Now that you mention, I'm going to get them one because pop, 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 pop. Yeah, it's annoying as hell.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're it's not your kids, you buy machine guns, noisemakers,
water pistols.
Yeah, pop, pop, gun. Yeah, or pop, pop, mower. Yeah, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Dynamite.
They're going to be keeping up some stores open in Canada, which I don't know why. They're buying action figures and other things more than the U.S.
Maybe they like more action figures up in Canada than we do.
Pawn Stars patriarch Richard Benjamin Harrison has passed away. The old man died at age 77.
Don't know him.
Nigeria has overtaken India as the country with the largest number of people living in extreme poverty. So we go from the most expensive
after
to
all those scams they pull. That's
what I'm wondering. I'm wondering, where is this concentration of the guy that has all this money to give? An estimated 87 million Nigerians, or around half of the country's population, is thought to be living on less than $1.90 a day.
Aren't they an oil-producing nation that can just bring everybody out of poverty just by spreading the wealth around?
Something isn't right.
I'm thinking, yeah, to that. Something isn't right.
Africans account for two-thirds of the total number of people in poverty around the world, which is a total of 643 million.
That's what are you going to do?
Well, maybe go with one of the scams or something. I don't know. And finally, Microsoft founder Bill Gates is pouring about $4 million into a project to create killer mosquitoes that destroy each other through sex. He's trying to cure malaria. And he's using funds from his charitable organization, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, to eradicate malaria.
He's starting to remind me of the guys, the one guy in particular, I can't remember his name, very famous Brit, who brought the starling over to North America.
Not Branson.
Thinking it was for some, he had some reason. It was a good reason at the time. So he's going to get some maniac mosquitoes put into the wild.
Yep.
They'll start to breed.
Yep.
And instead of just biting you once or twice, they're going to attack you. It's like killer mosquitoes.
I'm thinking like I Am Legend. Remember that movie with Will Smith?
Yeah.
This is what it is.
Yeah.
The plan is to create a genetically modified male mosquitoes that mate with the female counterparts in the wild. Only female mosquitoes bite. So Gates' army of gene-engineered male mosquitoes will be safe to humans.
Sure.
What's important is that these male...
The first generation...
Yeah. What's important is that these male mosquitoes contain a self-limiting gene that gets passed on to the female mates. Now, I will tell you, at my place up in Lake Placid, when I owned that place, there was an idea that, wow, there's too much grass in here and we want to do something to get rid of the grass. So they put grass-eating carp into the wild, and they were supposed to be not much doing there. And they put in also to kill some of the grass and some of the hydrilla that was taking over the lake, they put in sterilized tilapia. Well, 10 years later, there's a shit ton of tilapia in the lake.
Well, that doesn't sound right if they were sterilized.
Yeah, exactly. You can't be doing this kind of stuff with nature. Anyway, before we go any further, what is John C. Dvorak writing for PC Magazine?
Oh, man, I had it at the tip of my tongue and I didn't prepare. So I'll tell you in 1 second.
The end of the PC, was that the one? No.
No, that was last week. That was last week. Right. Yeah, I did the and I sent this in on Monday, so it gave me the extra day to forget what it was. it was a good one though.
Eugene Scheinfein. Scheinfein?
What's Scheinheim?
Was that the guy that did something?
No, I did. Here's what I – I think that's who was doing it. Okay, I did a thing on three bad ideas in tech that we should – that we have to keep an eye on.
Oh, don't tell us. But that's an interesting concept.
Yeah, and there's three really bad ideas. And the problem is they all have one Achilles – they have all kinds of problems. But they all have one common Achilles heel. Hackers.
Yeah, I was going to say easily hackable. Has to be something.
Yeah, and the three, I'll tell you what the three are, and then you can read the article if you feel like it.
Dropbox.
Cashless, the idea of a cashless society.
Yep.
The idea of voting over the internet.
Ah.
Bad idea.
Yeah.
And the kicker, the driverless car.
You didn't put like the cloud, file storage?
No, it's disastrous, hackers will get to that too. But I think overall it's not a bad idea.
Wi-Fi enabled pacemakers always freaked me out.
Don't get one.
I'm not getting one. It's just a bad idea.
I try to make a bigger issues than Wi-Fi enabled pacemakers.
Oh, I hear you.
You could do the IoT light bulbs. I don't like those either. No. They're stupid. No. Or the smart home should be on the list.
My favorite thing is those Amazon buttons that everybody's getting.
Ha.
I go to their house. I don't know about you. I just push the buttons.
Oh, yeah. If I see one of those buttons, I'm pushing it.
Pushing.
Yeah, two or three times. Push.
All right, let's talk about stocks. It's a game that we play each and every week. It's not a recommendation to buy or sell any security. It's nothing more than a simple game that John and I play and to have some fun, picking some stocks, some ideas and all. If it, whatever, for whatever reason you decide to play along with us and buy in real life with real money, anything that we talk about, please do us a favor and do your own research. Do your own due diligence on this. It's not a laughing matter. You can lose money in a significant amount, and we're not taking responsibility because we told you not to do it.
Seek out
professional financial advice. John C. Dvorak, Horowitz Company, or myself may own any of the stocks mentioned, and we will duly note that. Now, one of the things about the list that we have in front of you right now, which can be seen, by the way, over on DH Unplugged under the weekly stock list. It's a live action moving when market hours are open, what's happening with the stock and the performance of it compared to when we bought it and all that. There is a lot of John C. Dvorak all over this.
Yeah, your stuff's been kicked all year. This is like a reverse of last year.
Yeah.
Your stuff is getting booted out every time I turn around.
Yeah, it's either that's booted or I'm just not putting on as many names as you are.
Well, maybe you should up the ante here.
Yeah. Your Facebook.
Although
is
I will have to say the one right at the top, Facebook is up 30% since January, February, March 28th.
Yep. Ever since it was said that there was a big problem with the company, it was gone straight
up. Yeah, ever since that happened, I bought right there. Just the old rule, buy on bad news.
Yeah, buy when there's blood.
I did not violate any ideas. I also got a kick out of the fact that I shorted for the first time in probably 6 months, maybe almost a year, three companies.
Yeah.
And they're all up.
All up. Tesla up 4.5%, Apple up 1%, which is good, and Starbucks up 8%. When you shorted Starbucks is when the announcement came out about their same-store sales and they're increasing their dividend and all this other good stuff and Schultz retiring. And the stock was already down like 5%. So it's really getting killed, that stock.
Again, let's go back to the old rule.
Yeah.
Short on good news.
Yeah, short on good news, buy on bad news.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. And there's the proof of it.
There it is. Brazil got kicked off. The triple Brazil, which...
Yeah, the Brazil was a good, it was a speculation, let's face it.
It was up for a while, then it just got smoked. The currency is having some problems.
Your CRISPR, though, which is just a shame that it got kicked off.
Very upsetting. It's a 38.
You keep trying this over and over, and it hasn't worked out.
No, we've made some money on CRISPR.
I'm talking about the game.
Oh, Editas, last time was up 4.7 before it was kicked off. CRISPR was up 9.79 before it was kicked off.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm wrong.
Overstock, the big short that I wanted to have, which was... I got to look at what the price is on Overstock. But we got kicked off. We shorted 60. Got kicked off at 46. I don't even want to look at where it is now because that was my big idea for a short. But same thing happened. I thought it was OS.
You could have called some other stop.
That's at $30.
Oh, wow. What a killer.
That's annoying.
That's a huge killer.
Yeah.
Well, the only one I'm suffering with is my penny stock.
Yeah.
Which I bought at 50 cents and it's now down to 32 cents with a 30 cent stop, which is one of the few times we do this kind of thing because it's penny stock.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering whether or not
double up.
It's a good time to buy.
But you only got a 2 cents. Well, if you keep the 30 cents, you're going to have only 2 cents till it gets there.
Yeah, I know. I know. Well, I hope.
I would think this better.
Maybe it's going to go down to a nickel. If it goes to 30 cents, it's off.
Yeah.
But I don't. Maybe we're hitting bottom right now.
Yeah. I'm adding GE reluctantly, but adding it is up 7.5%.
I think your logic is good on this one.
Yeah, I would think that there is some opportunity for up to 15 or 16 bucks on this stock. So.
Yeah.
But I've said that before.
Might be a bad investment for anybody.
Yeah. Do you have a stock this week?
Yeah, well, I'm going to do Deutsche Bank.
Oh, DB. Going long DB.
Yeah.
DB. I got to find a long one for the copy over on my spreadsheet here. And what is the reason for this? Is this the bad news, good news thing?
No, I think it just can't. Deutsche Bank, I mean, it's a solid company. I think it's because the book value is so high. This is an old investor's idea.
So below book.
Way below book.
Way below book. Okay. Way with a W. What did you make on it last time when you shorted it?
That's a well, I think 30, 40%.
No, you made 10%.
Well, okay.
Although.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I sound like Trump.
Yeah. You made, well, in your mind you made that, but that's good. All right, we're going to end it right there because we're running a little bit late. I'll see you next Tuesday.
Okay, see you then.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, because I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.